Corporation.
May I please report, Mr. Stephen Young, with an argument for petition.
May I please report, Ms. Taft, Mr. Mercy. I'm Stephen Young, I'm a partner in the law firm of Condit, Peek & Young out of Texarkana and New Boston, Texas. It's a pleasure for me to be...
You're on my branch office.
Yes, sir. Satellite in the big city. It's a pleasure for me to be here today, and it's the first time I've had the opportunity to argue before you. This case arises out of a lease agreement entered into between Cates and Beach Leasing Company, in which Cates leased three rotary lifts, which are designed and manufactured by Dover. The purpose of these lifts is to raise automobiles up in the air so that you can work on them from underneath. The lease agreement assigns all the rights, causes of action, etc. for breach of warranty to Cates. Cates received a copy of this warranty after he got the rotary lift. The lift did not function properly. In fact, I believe that several automobiles fell off of the lift. Dover then tried unsuccessfully to repair the lift.
Counsel, is there any dispute that he did not receive a copy of the warranty until after the sale?
I don't think so, Your Honor. There's an affidavit signed by him that's in the summary judgment evidence to that effect. I don't believe there's any dispute to that fact.
Does it make a difference whether he received it at the time he entered into the contract?
I think that it would, because then it would not have been a basis of the bargain had he not had notice of this warranty and the disclaimer in it.
But isn't that a collateral issue? Isn't the whole issue was whether or not the disclaimer was the speaker's or not, and not whether he received the copy of the warranty at the time of the transaction?
The whole issue, Your Honor, you're correct, is whether or not the exclusory language that's contained in the express warranty is conspicuous. But I do think it's important to note that he didn't have this to look at the time he signed the lease. And in fact, he didn't receive it until afterwards, until after he got the equipment. Cates eventually filed suit based upon the breach and implied warranty of merchantability. Dover sought and obtained a summary judgment at the trial court on the grounds that it had effectively disclaimed the implied warranties in its express warranty. The Court of Appeals affirmed over the dissent of Justice Ben Z. Grant. And as stated earlier, the issue here is whether the exclusory language in Dover's warranty is conspicuous as required by Section 2316B of the Texas Business and Commerce Code. I believe each of you have a copy of that warranty before you. We need to start by examining the warranty. And you'll notice that nearly one half of the page, the top part of the page, is covered by preparatory language which leads into the actual warranty. The very beginning is a sentence written in 1/2 inch bold blue block type that reads, "You can take Rotary's new 5-year warranty and tear it apart." This is followed by 3 paragraphs that extol the virtues of their new warranty. The first paragraph begins with a sentence written in bold type and says, "And when you're through, it'll be just as solid as the number one lift company in America, Rotary." The second paragraph compares Dover's warranty with those of its competitors, saying in part that hidden in all the mumbo jumbo, you may find out too late that their beautifully worded warranty doesn't even cover major components. The last paragraph states in part, "We don't have to play it safe when it comes to guaranteeing." This language is clearly designed to catch the attention of the potential purchaser and convince him that he's getting the best warranty available. Then follows the actual warranty. It's framed in double blue lines, as you'll notice. The title, Warranty, is written in 3/8 inch bold blue block letters, a tongue twister for us, and it's centered on the page. The terms of the warranty are then contained in 5 paragraphs. They're all written in the same size type and in the same color of ink. The third paragraph contains the exclusory language, but there's nothing there to call the buyer's attention to the fact that an exclusion or a disclaimer is being made. There's nothing there to set it apart, no different colors, no underlining, no box around that paragraph, nothing. Section 2316B of the Texas Business and Commerce Code requires that in order to have an effective disclaimer, the exclusory language must be conspicuous and in writing. Well, if it's in writing, it has to be conspicuous and mention merchantability.
You're not suing on the express warranty.
No, sir.
Your position is it does not cover the alleged defect?
Yes, sir. That's part of the problem. And where our further position is that they did not properly exclude these implied warranties so that we should be entitled to pursue both avenues of relief. Section 1.01, subsection 10 of the Texas Business and Commerce Code defines conspicuous, and in it, it requires that in order for a writing to be conspicuous, that it must be so written that a reasonable person against whom it is to operate ought to have noticed it. Then the legislature gives us some examples of what they consider to be conspicuous language. And one of those is that language in the body of a form that is of a different, of a larger type, contrasting type, or different color would be conspicuous. That didn't happen here. Here the exclusory language is in the body of the actual warranty, but it's not of larger type, not nor contrasting type, nor different color, nor is there anything else to set it apart from the rest of the provisions of that warranty. There's nothing there that, sir.
But short, it's on one page, why ought not they to have noticed it?
Because it was buried, Your Honor, within the terms of the rest of the warranty. And it also followed all of this beautiful language at the top of the form that would lead you to believe that you're getting the very best warranty available. None of the Texas cases that we found directly dealt with the situation where you had the exclusory language buried in the terms of the warranty itself without something there to draw notice to it. There are several cases which have found that the disclaimers were effective, and those are cited in the briefs. I'll go over them briefly. One is Elmer versus Delaware Mini Computer Systems, which is a 1983 Dallas case. In that case, the disclaimer was in bold type. It appeared in a paragraph directly above the buyer's signature, and the buyer's representative had a copy of it for months prior to the conclusion of the transaction. In Emmons versus Durable Mobile Homes, the court did not bless us with a description of the disclaimer in that case, but they nonetheless found that that particular disclaimer was conspicuous. Like I say, we don't have anything to guide us there from that court. In Langford versus Rogers Ford Sales, which is an El Paso case, the language in the warranty pointing out that the implied warranties had been excluded was in all capital letters, and it stated in lieu of warranty of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose, that being in all caps. In Singleton versus LaCour, which is a 1986 Houston case, in which I believe the respondent relies on heavily, the disclaimer in this case was located in a box on the front of an invoice. The box contained one paragraph which had the exclusory language in it. It required the buyer's acknowledgement. Furthermore, there was some exclusory language on the back of the invoice which also required the buyer's acknowledgement. We had none of that in this case. In W.R. Weaver versus Burroughs Corporation, which is a 79 El Paso case involving a lease of computer equipment and a sale of computer programs, There was an equipment sales contract involving the programs in which a disclaimer was set out in all caps in a separate paragraph. Obviously, that is a conspicuous language. The lease also contained disclaimer language, but as we know, generally leases are not covered by the UCC, and the court pointed that out. In U.S. Steel versus FiberX, which is a 1988 Dallas case, we find that the disclaimer here was found to be ineffective. This disclaimer appeared in small print below a heading in all caps stating important notice to the buyer. And the court said that is simply not enough to draw attention to it, draw the attention of a reasonable buyer to it. Justice Grant, in his dissent, pointed out several cases from other jurisdictions which have dealt with this exact problem. That is, a warranty or a document titled similar to a warranty that contains exclusory language in it without bringing that exclusory language to the attention of the buyer. All of these cases have said that that sort of situation is not effective. In Matthew Ferguson versus Utley, which is a Kentucky case, there was the words warranty and agreement written in large, bold type. The exclusory language was then buried in the body of the warranty with nothing to draw attention to it. The court said that's not good enough.
Is that the case that probably comes closest to this?
It comes right, yes, sir. I'd say that it does out of all of them.
From your, really, your contention is we've got to look outside of Texas for authority on this because there's really not any case in point here.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And were you, in looking at these other states, able to establish whether there's any majority-minority rule on this matter?
No, sir. I was not.
Not that many states that
there's not that many
particular matter.
No, sir. These cases, I think, reflect nearly all of them that have dealt with this particular situation. All of these cases, and I won't take your time by going through all of them, but in each case, the seller used terms such as warranty, factory warranty, or terms of warranty that would be in bold print or all caps or something of that nature to imply that the buyer was getting protection, and then hid in the terms of that warranty a disclaimer. Here, Dover went beyond that. It used nearly half of the page and used print that was one-third larger than the print used for the warranty title to entice the prospective buyer into believing that he was getting the best warranty available in the industry. Clearly this is misleading, and it's calculated to mislead the buyer into believing that he's got something really great.
That's only because they don't want to play it safe, as the first paragraph indicates.
Of course they want to play it safe.
Okay.
Counsel, if you folded the sheet of paper so that you just had this, just the blue box.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it your opinion that we would have an exclusion that was conspicuous?
No, sir. I feel that, and this, what Dover should have done in this case was to maybe put a box around that particular paragraph, underline it, bold it, or put it in a different color ink. And the legislature has specifically given us that sort of example as to what they thought in drafting these provisions would be a conspicuous writing, especially when the language is in a document. All of the most noticeable, eye-catching language used by Dover strongly implies the making of a warranty as opposed to disclaiming a warranty. This is especially true of the preparatory language, which we talked about earlier, that contains the largest type and that taps their warranty as being the best in the industry. This is the information that is most likely to be noticed, read, and remembered by the purchaser. Further, the exclusory language is buried in the third paragraph of the actual warranty with nothing to call attention or attract the attention of the potential purchaser to the fact that hidden in the mumbo-jumbo of their beautifully written warranty is a banana peel. Dover has gone to great lengths to build an illusion in the mind of its purchasers or prospective purchasers. If the court finds that the exclusory language contained in this warranty is conspicuous, then the very purpose of Section 2.3.16 will have been defeated, and that is...
Your time's up, counsel. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
The court is ready to hear all arguments from respondents.
Okay, please the court. Mr. John Mercy will present arguments for respondents.
May it please the court, I'm John Mercy from Texas County. To answer Judge Gonzalez's question, there is a controversy in this case as to whether or not he actually received this before the purchase or afterwards. If you'll notice in our response to their petition, there's an excerpt from his deposition where he was asked specifically, what warranties did you receive prior to the purchase? It's on page 52 of the transcript. He stated there that he had received it, and it was his understanding it was a 5-year warranty that they would fix anything that went wrong during that time period.
Well, he didn't say he received it before he entered this transaction, did he?
The specific question to him, I don't have it in front of me, is what warranties did you receive before you bought this?
And his answer was, I may be wrong, but I think it was a 5-year warranty. What was your understanding? Any problems would be taken care of within the 5-year period.
Yes, sir.
That's exactly what a salesperson would tell him. That doesn't mean that he had a copy of the written warranty.
He had at least knowledge of the warranty at that time, and enough of the details of the warranty that he knew more than is contained in the headlines, more than is contained in the blueprint of the warranty. He knew some of the specifics as contained in the body of the warranty itself.
But, you know, you've got to keep your eye on the ball. And the ball is not on the warranty. The ball is on the disclaimer. Talk
right
about the disclaimer.
The question is whether it's conspicuous or not, basically.
Right.
Then there is a question regarding public policy as to whether or not, if this court finds that it's not conspicuous, whether a person who has actual knowledge of a disclaimer should be allowed to, after they have knowledge of it, use that as a defense that it's not conspicuous.
What evidence do we have that he had actual knowledge of the disclaimer?
The testimony that's contained at page 52 in the transcript. Yes, sir.
Where do you read that he had knowledge of the disclaimer in the portion you cited there?
Based upon his testimony that...
That he knew he had a 5-year warranty?
Yes, sir, and that what that warranty contained was that they would fix anything during that 5-year period. So he had knowledge of the warranty at that time. The warranty also contains the disclaimer.
Well, what indication is there in any of that testimony that he even had this piece of paper that we're talking about here?
There's none, Your Honor, that he had specifically this piece of paper.
Or that he had any knowledge that there was a disclaimer that went along with that 5-year warranty.
Your Honor, if he has the warranty, if he had the warranty, he had knowledge of the disclaimer because it's contained in it.
But you've indicated that the testimony doesn't indicate as to whether he ever actually had
this piece of paper. Warranty. Correct.
Counsel, let me tell you what bothers me. Okay, if you fold it, or you just have the warranty, there is a lot of case law dealing where you just have the warranty and you have the printed language. There's a lot of case law. But you've devoted about 40% of the page, okay, in the largest type possible, to creating an impression, and I think this is his argument, that you receive something that you really don't. In other words, the top 40%, in as large type as you can, take the Rotary's new 5-year warranty and tear it apart. And tying that in with two cases that came out of the dissent from the Court of Appeals, what they say is, in effect, that this top part of the warranty, you have created an ambiguous situation, and by that ambiguous situation, you have removed it from being conspicuous. What would be your response to that? Because this is in the dissent, quoting cases from Oregon and South Carolina.
Both of those cases are consumer cases. This case involves a commercial transaction with an arm's length transaction between two businessmen.
I thought we are not judging the warranty. We're judging the specific conduct of each individual.
No, Your Honor, but we must look at the disclaimer in light of the parties, in the context of the parties that are entering into this. This is not a consumer transaction. This is a business transaction between businessmen. It's an arm's length transaction. and we need to look at it in that light.
Well, and this is kind of a professional type of dignified, complicated business agreement that would be drawn up.
Counsel, what is your response to the question that the top part here, in all the wonderful language, creates an ambiguity which removes the warranty from being conspicuous?
The language at the top is eye-catching, as the opposing counsel said. It's to get their attention to focus it on the warranty. If you read the language at the top of the page, it specifically focuses your attention on the warranty that's given at the bottom of the page. The warranty itself, which contains the disclaimer, is set out in the box on one single page, and if you look at the five paragraphs that are contained in that warranty, while the disclaimer we're talking about is in the third paragraph, there's exclusionary language with regard to other things in all five paragraphs. So what the top of the page does is focus the attention of the reader on this particular page, on the warranty. The language may seem to be ambiguous, but what its purpose is to focus attention on the warranty itself.
Does the top of the page tell you you don't need to read the rest of the page?
Yeah, the whole purpose of lulling to sleep is no legal mumbo jumbo here. Trust me.
Well, if you read the disclaimer and the language that's in there, it is written in plain English.
Well, the top of the page is what causes the confusion.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, that it may create an ambiguous situation in saying that this is our new warranty. You don't really need to look at the rest of this. We're not trying to do to you what everybody else is trying to do to you.
When you read the top of the page, it would be what you would call a bumper to bumper. In other words, we warrant everything between the two bumpers.
I don't think it specifically says that. What it says is that watch out for our competition because their warranty isn't as good as ours.
Well, what it does say is if you tear this apart, literally, what will you have left? You'll have left the implied warranty, won't you? If this didn't exist, you'd have the implied warranty. If this document didn't exist.
Correct.
If we really did tear it, then the implied warranties would apply.
Yes, Your Honor, because there would be no disclaimer. What we need to look at is what makes this particular disclaimer conspicuous under the statute as set forth by the legislature, and that basically is whether or not it will bring to a reasonable person knowledge that it's there. Now, in this case, we're dealing with not ordinary Joe off the street, we're dealing with a business person. Is the way that this warranty and disclaimer are put together, is it such that it would put a businessman on notice of the disclaimer?
Didn't you just say that there are disclaimers in every one of the five paragraphs?
There are to some extent, Your Honor.
So this is a warranty that says this ain't one.
No, Your Honor, it's a warranty that sets forth specifically what the warranty covers. In paragraph 1, it says that they'll pay for replacement parts.
And specifically says what it doesn't cover.
Yes, sir.
In five different times, five different places.
Yes, sir. With regard to five different subjects.
Counsel, under 1.201 of the UCC, subparagraph 10, which defines conspicuous, it talks about it is conspicuous if it is in larger or contrasting type or color. Now, the exclusion is it's not in larger type or contrasting type, and the color is no different.
Your Honor, section 1.201.10 is giving a couple of examples as to what would be conspicuous. It does not say that a disclaimer has to have those to meet that section. Those are examples only. The purpose is that where the disclaimer is placed, the way that it's printed out, the way that it is represented to the other party is such that it draws his attention to that. Because of several factors with regard to this one, it's conspicuous. First of all, it's on a separate page that's handed to him. It's on the front page. It's completely covered on the front page. It's not hidden as the Kentucky case is on the back page. The Kentucky case is dissimilar, at least in that regard, besides some other things. But basically, it's contained on one page.
Entitled warranty.
It's titled warranty, yes, Your Honor. And it contains all the terms of the warranty on one page where they can read it.
I'm interested in your argument that this is to be judged by subjective rather than objective standard. Or do you have case authority for that?
That it is to be judged by this, a subjective standard?
That this might be conspicuous to a businessman, but not conspicuous to a consumer.
Now, there's, I believe it's the Singleton case, and I may be wrong. One of the cases cited in our response specifically deals with a transaction between, an arm's length transaction between businessmen. They held there that it was conspicuous, even though that it wasn't set out in bold type, even though that it wasn't in contrasting color, because it was an arm's length business transaction. I think it changes the level that we assess the reasonable man in looking at what he would find in here.
Also, I hear Tishner argue that sort of that conspicuousness might be visible and it might be verbal. In other words, if in big blue letters at the top of this page it said there are no exclusion of warranties, implied warranties in this warranty, and then further on down there was one in great big bold letters in contrasting color of type, it seems to me that that might not be conspicuous, not because it wasn't visible, but because it was verbally concealed. What's your response to that?
When the legislature wrote 1.201, they did not address that. They address the way you set up your exclusion, the way you bring attention
visibly.
Visibly. They didn't address the fact that you may have conflicting language in there and that type of thing. Under the statute, we're required to look at what visibly brings attention to this. If you'll notice on the page, one of the reasons I provided originals is because the color does in fact, as opposing counsel say, draw your eye to this. Judge Cook, in his article in the Bar Journal, says color is one of the best ways to get attention, and in fact he says blue is the best graphic color you can use, which is here. This page would stick out from a contract. It would grab your attention that this is the warranty.
Yeah, but if you're a business, let's say that your focus is on the warranty. Our focus should be on the disclaimer. Now, yeah. Would it make a lot more sense for your argument to have some punch to it, the disclaimer to be in blue, separate and apart from the warrant?
Ideally, Your Honor, in an ideal world, we'd have a separate page printed up in all blue with boxes around it and stars and everything that said disclaimer of warranty and setting it out on a separate page. That's not reality. That's not how business is done, especially in the commercial atmosphere.
And is that what the Act intended, though?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because if you look at the cases in Texas where they have held it to be conspicuous, none of them are in that situation. There is not a single case in Texas, and to my knowledge in the United States, where the disclaimer has been required to be printed on a separate page with a title "Disclaimer of Warranties" at the top, bold print, or anything like that.
Nobody's suggesting that.
That, taking to the extreme, that's what would be required under statute if we take that position. I think what the statute focuses on, whether the way a particular warranty and disclaimer, and you cannot separate the two, is that does it draw attention to the warranty and the terms of the warranty and the disclaimer? I think clearly here that it does. This is not a situation where it's buried in the middle of a paragraph. It's a separate paragraph within the warranty itself that sets out the specific exclusion. It's under the heading of warranty, and in a business context, a businessman knows what a warranty is, and as part of his investigation, should look at that. That's why it's labeled as a warranty. The mere fact that the disclaimer is carried under the heading of warranty, though, does not mean that it's not conspicuous.
Counsel, I fully agree with you on that point. That doesn't bother me. Okay? But the standard is whether a reasonable person against whom it is to operate ought to have noticed. That's the standard that's set forth in a number of Texas cases, for instance, U.S. Steel versus Fabric. And again, would a reasonable person looking at the top 40% of the page, would that ever have called his attention to the one little paragraph below?
I think so, because it calls his attention to the warranty language, which includes the disclaimer. The purpose is to draw and focus his attention to that area of the agreement, that area of the contract. This disclaimer is contained as a term of the warranty, which is generally how it's done. It is set out separately. The color, the separate page, it's not in small type, draws the person to this page to examine.
Is the determination of conspicuousness a question of law or a question of fact?
It's a question of law, Your Honor.
To be determined by the court?
Yes, sir. Both by statute and by case law.
Counsel, the old saying, the big print giveth and the little print taketh away. All the big print here giveth, you know, and it creates an impression that this is a 5-year unlimited warranty.
The heading says that, Your Honor, but the disclaimer is the same size as the actual terms of the warranty that are set out. It's not a situation typically where the big print gives and takes away, where you have all the good stuff in big print and all the other stuff is in small print. Here we have everything in the same size print in the warranty itself.
Before you sit down, is any contention in this case, and the other side made the contention, that to try to disclaim the implied warranties of merchantability and fitness are void as against public policy? Is that contention made in this case?
That has not been raised in this case.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim. Counselor's language in the East Tennessee against whom it is to operate.
Yes, sir.
Does that make this a subjective standard?
No, sir.
To look at, I mean, I haven't ever bought a lift machine. Are we to look at the nature of the parties, or is this still a reasonable person?
None of
all the world type case.
None of the cases I have seen have applied a subjective standard. And in fact,
doesn't the Weaver case seem to?
Weaver, in dicta, talks about the provisions of a lease of computer equipment, which contain some exclusory language in the lease. Okay? Leases are not normally covered by the UCC. And in dicta, the court said, well, these were businessmen operating at arm's length. And it found that that language, again in dicta, was conspicuous in the lease. But here we're dealing with a sale. Well, it was a lease, but we were assigned the right to sue for any breaches of warranty that the vendor might have had. And along with that, we got to spend the money on it too. But Section 2316 clearly tells us that we've got an objective test to go by. Had the legislature intended to have a subjective test in there, it would have been very easy for them to put it in. They could have said, or if the purchaser has actual knowledge, or if the purchaser is a businessman and deals with these sorts of contracts continually, or if they're merchants that deal together. But it doesn't go on to say that. It says that in order for this language to be effective, if it's in a writing, the language excluding the warranties should be conspicuous. And I stress the language excluding should be conspicuous. Here, the language excluding the warranties is not conspicuous. It's buried in the terms of the rest of the warranty. And as y'all have pointed out on several occasions, this follows all of this language up on the top that tells you you've got this great 5-year warranty to live by, and that Dover doesn't have to play it safe.
If this paragraph were in caps and red ink, would that affect your position?
We wouldn't be here today, Your Honor.
So you are just contending that it's visible conspicuousness that applies, and you were not misled by the top part. You just didn't see the bottom.
I think in conjunction, you have to look at it as a whole. It's all there as a whole. The top part is certainly misleading. You read it, it's the most, it stands out more than anything else on that page. And that's what's going to stick in your mind. And it leads you into believing that you've got a great warranty. Had they gone on and maybe put this exclusionary language in red ink down at the bottom, you probably would have noticed it. It would have caught your eye and drawn your attention to it. But they didn't do that. Again, I feel that we have to look at what the legislature intended when they wrote 316 and 210 subsection 1, 210 subsection 10. This is a reasonable standard. We've got to look at the language that does the excluding. And there is nothing here in this particular document that would draw a reasonable person's attention to it. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
To conclude the argument in this clause, the foregoing clauses are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. That concludes the business.